Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 3-4-2 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Good. Great. Let's ride, hoop it up, etc.
We got the abbreviated intro. We do not have a guest, which must means other news has happened. And boy, do we have news on the W front. As the WNBA Finals ended on Sunday night, a thrilling five-game series, I think 20 total lead changes, two overtime games, etc. The New York Liberty, for the first time in franchise history, are your WNBA champions. A thrilling game five victory that, again, went to overtime, a 67-62 win, which, first and foremost, I feel like we've covered quite a few game fives and game sevens throughout the history of the pod. And the one thing that you always say is that, you know, those closeout games can just get weird. When you get that deep into a series, everyone knows what the other team is running, et cetera. It's about execution. And you never know who's going to pop up and have a big game, who's going to show up, show out, et cetera. The fact that it took overtime for both of these teams to hit the 60s, just kind of speaks to how weird the game five was. I think it was a combined five made threes in this basketball game. The defenses were indeed keyed in. Like, there was some early success for Minnesota with Nafisa Collier in particular with some of the slips and some of the seals. But for the most part, both of these teams were really in the mud trying to figure things out and ultimately trying to knock down shots. But, man, big game for Jonquel Jones. Huge contributions from Leone Fevish and Niara Sabali for the New York Liberty. Sabrina Ionescu couldn't knock down shots, but as you mentioned during our watch party, which I will once again shout out, folks, if you want to watch basketball with us, especially with the NBA season coming up, you want to rock with the Dunker Spot watch party room. But as you pointed out, a solid defensive effort from Sabrina Ionescu in this game five. I think Breonna Stewart also very good defensively in this basketball game, despite her inability to knock down shots for most of this game. And I just really appreciate the way the Liberty were able to carve this one out, because it didn't look great in that first half as they were trying to find things offensively. But that third quarter started, the defense ramped up once again, got key buckets in transition slash early offense. They were able to get downhill. And again, role players made big plays throughout this basketball game. And I think as I just zoom out from the series, like, this is ultimately what this is supposed to look like. Two elite teams, two versatile teams, two teams that could press a lot of different buttons lineup wise. The Liberty naturally could press more of those buttons than the Lynx could. We can talk about that a little bit more in depth as we get deeper into this game five. But ultimately, the Liberty won the possession battles. They hit the shots when they needed to. They made the plays when they needed to. I know there is rough talk happening surrounding how the end of the fourth quarter went, but ultimately, I feel like the Liberty made more plays. And you zoom out, look at these five games. The Liberty had the only convincing win in the series. Everything else was just single digits or a single possession game. They had the big game to bounce back. I thought coming into the series, they were the better team. It took five games and a lot of hashtag antics, but they were able to pull it off. And I think they were, it kind of puts an exclamation point on what was a historic season for them, quite as kept. Again, we talked about it heading into the postseason, but the Liberty became the first team in W history to win 30 games in a season in back-to-back years. And overall, their offense was elite. Sabrina Ionescu took a jump. Breonna Stewart wasn't able to knock down threes for the first half of the year, but ultimately carved teams up inside the arc. First of the usage offensively, Jonquel Jones, inside-out threat. The ball movement was there. They were able to poke at mismatches. And the defense, even though they didn't finish first in defensive rating, they were elite all year long. And when you think about the collective size and versatility that they had, they just profiled as a team that was going to give any and everyone a lot of issues. And we saw that against Atlanta. We saw that against the Aces. We ultimately saw that against the Minnesota Lynx, to where the Lynx had their pockets of shot making and ball movement. But it didn't consistently feel like Minnesota Lynx basketball offensively. And we joked about it a little bit on the last pod in the game four, but it kind of stood out to me going to the pregame pressers on Zoom anyway, but listening in on the pregame pressers or the postgame pressers. And Cheryl Reeve was pretty consistent about not feeling like the offense was where it needed to be. Even in the wins, it didn't feel like they were executing at the level that she wanted them to. And I think that's a huge testament to the problems that New York's defense can pose, did pose throughout their series, and ultimately posed throughout this season. And so, again, very worthy champions in this one. I really enjoyed this series. This was real hoop to its core. unless you like 3-point shooting, in which case, you know, that game five might not be for you. But just a heck of a season and one heck of a run for the New York Liberty.
Say it again.
It was one heck of a season, one heck of a run for the New York Liberty.
Okay, good. I heard it. Just want to make sure. I wasn't tripping. I mean, that was a battle. It was two defenses working at an incredibly high level on both ends of the floor. Liberty came out tight. The Lynx pounced on it. The piece of Collier wanted every single bit of it. But if you looked at each team, you rewatch that game, look at the closeouts, look at the rotations, look at the effort, look at the screen navigation. These were two defenses that were locked in, and it didn't always result in the prettiest basketball, if you like, scoring, but they were working. They were giving their all. Switch, scram, switch. We're going to try and exploit this. Actually, no, you're not. I thought the Lynx had a great game plan defensively, great help. Brianna Stewart did not have a good time because every time they had a switch that she wanted to attack and she looked to drive, guess what? Three jerseys right there. So now we have to go quick. If we go quick and we're not making shots, doesn't work. Sabrina was trying to drive all over the place and with the intent to score or draw a foul, and didn't either most of the time. So that was it. But Jonquel came through. The bench came through. Obviously, Sabley's minutes were huge, but Kayla Thornton was also just as big as far as being able to match the intensity they needed defensively. And I think that's kind of the story of the Liberty. This is a team that had grown offensively last year, but defensively just fell short, fell flat. And while they had the activity, they didn't necessarily have the ability to shapeshift and be able to defend teams that could drive and kick and beat you one-on-one and still maintain everything. They workshopped that and worked through that this year. And you saw in this game five, the effort they gave to just try and work to contain. Because Minnesota did a really good job of, hey, you're doing a good job against our movement. You're being physical. We're going to find a combination of two players that you don't want to switch. And if you do like to switch, we're going to find Fee on the seal. And we're going to make sure we hit you late. In that second half, the Liberty worked to get away from that. And especially when they went, hey, you know what? Let's put more size on the floor. You know what this lineup needs? More size. And now it's just jumbo package. Throw it to Jonquel, please. And we go on from there. But neither team would really be denied. And that was the fun of it. You know, I think whoever was going to win was going to be deserving a championship because these were the two best teams, in my opinion, this year on both ends of the floor. And it was just kind of, it was really fun to watch them try and figure out where the openings were against each other.
Yeah, I think just to speak to, again, the closeness of the series, I think the Liberty ended up winning the series by 17 total points across five games, which is insane in and of itself. And like circling back to your point about the help that Brianna Stewart was getting from Minnesota on some of those drives, the common theme for Brianna Stewart in this postseason, whenever she would have a poor shooting game, and particularly when she was missing some of the shots that she normally makes inside the arc, some of those push shots, some of those short pull-ups, et cetera, I felt like the common theme for her listening to the postgame was, I felt sped up. I probably just need to slow down a little bit. I felt like I was rushing. And so to have those comments in my head while watching back, the late help that they were showing, the hard doubles they were sprinkling in. Oh, let's actually just wait until she gets to the gather. Now let's flutter and let's see if we can get a late contest or see if we can force her into a late pass. It was really good stuff. And I think it had that residual effort of, okay, cool. I got to switch against Bridget Carlton. I'm going to catch. I'm going to immediately go one dribble and then go up with the shot before the help can get there. And I think that played a part in Brianna Stewart not having the level of efficiency that she is used to. But to the poke and get portion of the program, like it was just really smart stuff from both ends of the floor. Like you mentioned the fee seals. And I think, and I talked about it during the game, it felt like New York had a little bit more room to try to hunt out some specific matchups if they wanted to. But that's also the beauty of what Minnesota's defense is. Because they can communicate as well as they do off the ball, because they also bring their level of activity and physicality with some of the off-ball screens. Even if you are trying to hunt specific matchups, they can make you burn a clock while doing so. Like it's a formula that we saw New York execute throughout this season, throughout this postseason run. Like I think back to the game one against Atlanta, where they really just took everything the Dream wanted to do in the half court and said, actually, you're just not getting any of this easy. We're hitting you with full court pressure. We're going to be physical off the ball before you start to come off the screen. We're going to be physical as you're coming off the screen. We're also going to switch this. So we're pushing you out. We're burning clock. And now, even if you felt like you had a matchup you wanted to go at, it's late in the clock. And we have even more room to send late help if we want to, if we feel the need to. But ultimately, with this Liberty group, as you talked about the difference between their defense this year and last year, there's also just a trust level in their 1v1 defense that I think was just heightened this year compared to last year. And I think the loudest portion of that is having a player like Leonie Feverish and the impact that she had throughout this entire season and throughout this postseason run. She was a plus-minus monster. She was really good defensively, took on a multitude of perimeter assignments in this series. And when you now remove one of the smaller players from your rotation and you enter this 6'4 player that can switch all over the place, it just makes it that much harder to poke and prod at things and to find easy buttons within your half-court offense. And so, one, on a general level, I agree with you that this was a battle, and I appreciate how these two defenses locked in, because going back to the predictions that I had heading into the series, like, one of my bold predictions for the series was that the assist record was for a finals game was going to be broken between these two teams. I thought there was going to be at least one game where this is going to be super high scoring, high flowing. The Liberty are moving the ball and dicing things up. The Lynx are knocking down threes. It was going to be at least one of those in the series. And we just flat out did not get that.
Nikias, they had a combined 31 assists yesterday. So
yeah.
Indeed.
That's, that is an L I'll proudly take. But it also just speaks to, again, how disciplined both of these defenses were in general. And they both did a really good job of taking away the easy stuff, especially when it matters. Because when you think back to some of these fourth quarters throughout this series, like even in the Minnesota wins, or if you want to go back to this one, there was always a stretch in a third quarter or a fourth quarter where the jazz music just stops for one of these teams. We might have found early success here, but here's the Liberty ramping things up, or here's a run for the Lynx. I don't know where we're going. I don't know what we're poking at. And we're oscillating between shot clock violation and here is a pull-up three with 17, 16 on the clock. And that's so difficult to do when you're talking about teams with this skill level. And so just a very quick salute to both Sandy Brondello and Cheryl Reeve for the series that they coached in this one. Actually, can I circle back to the second unit for New York real quick?
1,000%.
I guess I'll go with the run first. We talked a little bit about it, particularly in the Atlanta series, where you have Leonie Feverish exploding early on in that game one, et cetera. And like just the general move to Courtney Vandersloot coming off the bench and the way that Sloot didn't love the move, but ultimately embraced it and was impactful in this one. And the fact that the Liberty had the ability to press that button and to have the success they did speaks to the versatility and the depth that they have. But again, you mentioned Nyara Sabali, the defense, the freaking steal in overtime that I still don't know how she got to it in time. But like that steal and the timely drives, the timely rotations and contest at the rim that didn't register as a block for her, but like she was just all over the place defensively. And then on the other end, again, timely drives, timely offensive rebounds, timely tap outs. She just filled gaps in a way that she wasn't prepared to do last season. A lot of that was just injury related, but watching her grow from, you know, the flashes that we saw last season, some of the stuff that we saw in the regular season, and to be able to gain this level of trust in the fourth, you know, in the second half, fourth quarter, overtime of a game five in the finals, it's huge. Like one of the questions heading into the series that I had was in light of like Benaja Laney Hamilton not being as healthy as she could be. It's like, hey, is this going to be Benaja or is Sloot closing games? Because Sloot has also done good things as a secondary ball handler and things like that. And the answer was just neither in game five. To your point, actually, we're just going to size all the way up. We're going to go with Jonquel and Nyara Sabali in the front court. We have Leo, we have Sabrina, we have Stewie. Good luck penetrating this defense. And we feel like we still have enough to generate something solid on the other end. Again, Minnesota made that difficult, but I don't know. Like I just keep circling back to the versatility and the depth of this group. Great stuff from Nyara. You mentioned Kayla Thornton even earlier in the postseason, just being able to get random good Kennedy Burke minutes as another wing that they could toss out if they feel that they need a different look. And what Courtney Vandersloot did as a playmaker, her random drives, her timely shot making, her defense perking up in a way that I didn't expect, particularly earlier in the postseason. Like they just got a little bit from everyone. So when the Stars didn't have it, you still had a level of production coming in. And then when you do look at the Stars in this one, Jonquel Jones, again, the night that Stewie and Sabrina didn't have it as scorers, at the very least, Jonquel Jones was their most consistent source of offense for them. Like, she's a former MVP in her own right and ends up being named finals MVP, which I guess I'll quickly ask you, did you like the Jonquel finals MVP pick?
I respected it. She was very important to what the Liberty did on both ends of the floor. So while you may have expected it to be Stewie for everything she did, Sabrina for the shot, Jonquel was pretty consistent throughout the entire series as far as making Minnesota pay. Some of those switches, they just didn't really have an answer for. And so it wasn't a good time. So I understood it.
Okay, I got you. Actually, I'll give the floor back to you. Was there anything else from the game five in particular that stood out to you that you wanted to talk?
I mean, I thought Leonie Fibish was really great offensively, especially in the fourth and overtime as far as put the ball in my hands. I'll make a couple shots. They don't really have an answer for me or coverage designed for me. So I'll turn the corner and drive and made some plays that way. Big shot start overtime to shift the momentum. So I thought her play was great, and I thought it was a great team effort. I mean, Sabrina did not have it, but she was going to try and find it. Stewie did not have it. She was going to try and find it. Both teams fought their tails off, and it was a really fun battle.
That it was. I guess quickly on the Minnesota side, just the general fight of this team. Lafisa Collier gave it all she had. And like one of the graphics that popped up during the game five was that Fee became, I think, the first player in W history to play 40 plus minutes in back-to-back finals games during that game three and game four. And before she fouled out, I think she got like a grand total of like 28 or 30 seconds of rest in the game five. And that she gave it her all on both ends of the floor. Kayla McBride was game for this one. And while she didn't have the three ball falling, it was drive after drive after drive after drive after drive for Kayla McBride. Again, we're talking about just general fight and physicality and heart. Alana Smith left it out there, man. She left it out there, battling to the best of her ability with Jonquel Jones. And just in general, like trying to help grab these boards from Minnesota, which New York won the rebound battle by 11 in this game five. And a game as close as this one, like that's a number that pops for me when looking at just the general box score at the very least. But Alana Smith fought her tail off. And I think if we're just looking at the game five and kind of the downturn up for Minnesota, It was the worst time for the non-Kayla guards to not have it. I think within the first four games, you saw what kind of impact Courtney Williams in particular could have with her blend of playmaking and pull-up shooting. And with the level of switches that she was seeing against New York, they threw out a lot of coverages at her, which I think was just a sign of respect to her. We're not going to let you get comfortable because we know what you can do. Her timely shot-making was so key, and Courtney just did not have it in the game five. Bridget Carlton, who has made big shots for Minnesota throughout the regular season series between these two teams, the Commissioner's Cup game between these two teams. Bridget didn't have it. Natisha Heidemans, would go back to what the game one when Minnesota closed the game small. Like, how big was Natisha Heidemans in that game with her drives and her shot making? She didn't quite have it. There were some costly turnovers for her, and she was one of the places that New York looked to poke at late in that game. Just, hey, here's the size advantage. You don't really want to switch this. Let's see if we can get you in action and generate something good. And so it was kind of, it was unfortunate timing for Minnesota to have those things working against them at the same time, it felt like, while the Liberty were just grinding things out. Even then, I zoom out and what a season this was for Minnesota. I know I've said this like 15 times on the pod at this point, but my question headed in was, how good would this defense be? Would it be good enough for the offense to matter? And they were one of the best defensive units in basketball this season. And to be able to ride that defensive foundation this year to complement what Nafisa Collier was able to accomplish on the offensive end. She was the defensive player of the year this year. But to complement what Fee was able to do, the shot making from Kayla McBride, the pick and roll play from Courtney Williams, the big shot making from Bridget Carlton, and the overall ball movement. Again, the Lynx were a team that set the W assist rate record this season. It was such a beautiful build. It was beautiful basketball to watch on both ends of the floor. When they were locked in, they were a suffocating group. And, you know, they're not going to take participation trophies or anything like that. But I just really enjoyed watching this team play basketball. Like, I can't say enough about how well they played on both ends of the floor this year. And it it, I don't know. It just kind of ended up being one of those series where I hate somebody had to lose because of how good these teams were and the journeys that both of these teams took throughout this year to build and to get to this moment. But I do think the Lynx also just deserve their flowers for the year they were able to put together.
1,000%. Tremendous on both ends. They had a system on both ends of the floor that just put so much pressure on teams. You had to guard everyone on the court. They could all drive. They could all shoot. They could all make plays. Defensively, they were going to fly around, make everything tough on you. You had to sustain your offense. They were a challenge, and it was a really, really fun team to watch. And I know they had pride in the way that they played all season long, especially in this league where, you know, some teams are coming together, some teams are not. They found a way to make it work. And so it'll be fun to see how they build on that.
I guess related to that, just quickly on the offseason front for Minnesota, Mike Hines Allen, who wound up not playing in game five, Letitia Heidemann, both are unrestricted free agents. In terms of reserved free agency, which simply means the Minnesota Lynx are the only teams that have negotiating rights with these players unless they relinquish those rights and those players become unrestricted free agents. In that case, Cecilia Zandalasini and Olivia Apupa, both reserved free agents for Minnesota. If you are the Lynx, is this just bank on internal growth? We like the group that we have. We like the core that we have. Minor tweaks around the edges. Or is there a player type that you would like to see them go after this offseason?
For me, it's tweaks around the edges. I think you have a concept. You have a formula of what you need from your bigs, from your guards, from your wings, and now you just build on that. You have proof of concept. So I don't think they need a specific type of player because it's a little bit system based to a degree. You bring in a certain amount of talent. Do they fit into what you're looking for? Do they get what you need? So I mean, you just keep trying to find people who can shoot, people who can make plays, put the ball on the floor, defend. And you continue to build out. Hopefully, maybe try and have some more versatility, I guess, in the wing guard room to a degree. But They've shown what they have.
Yeah, gotcha. Can I ask you a general team building question? Because I feel like either on the W side or the NBA side, really just across sports, team wins title. The goal is like, how do we build to beat this team? Or what can we take from the team that won, et cetera? And so for a team like Minnesota, how do you kind of balance, let's accentuate, let's strengthen what we do versus this is a specific thing that New York poked that we need to find an answer for this?
I mean, I think it's one of those things where you can get in the danger of prepping for a singular team and then running into a different team and putting yourself in a tough spot. So I don't necessarily know if the Lynx would look and be like, well, we need more size. Like they might, but does the size fit what you do on either end of the floor? And that's where the tricky part comes. So I don't necessarily think that they will go into this offseason saying, well, we got to fix this for New York because they might not even see New York. There's a whole bunch of great teams in the W. It's very competitive. So I think they'll probably have the mindset of let's continue to build us in the way that best suits us. Because I'm sure a lot of people didn't think the signings they had last year would have this kind of impact, but they did. Mm-hmm. So now you just kind of find the players that fit your group and go from there.
I got you. I think for me with Minnesota, they're in such a unique situation to where they can just kind of bank on internal growth and just bank on that internal development. Like, I feel like Diamond Miller might just be one of the most important players of this offseason across the league. Because I think whatever she's able to do and build on this summer or this fall, she's either able to be fully integrated into this Minnesota group and give them an extra dimension, give them more size on the wing, gives them another self-creator or another driver that fits into their ethos. And depending on how she grows defensively, particularly off the ball, someone that can add another layer of defensive versatility for this group if development hits. Or we do feel like we could go somewhere outside. We don't want to mess with the core. Diamond fell outside of like our core group. Can we use Diamond to get the type of player that we need? Like, I just feel like she can shift quite a bit this offseason among like the non-star names that may be moving around in terms of trades or free agency. So I would keep an eye on that portion. And even beyond the internal development portion, Maisha Hines out on a free agent, you could just have more Dorca next year. Yeah, she ended up logging minutes in this finals for Minnesota. And I think before the injury, like she was kind of just sliding in to be the backup center anyway, or even the starting center, depending on how Alana Smith played. And of course, Alana played tremendous. Was an all defense player, et cetera. But I think she's a part of the future. If she just gets better, what does that look like? Courtney Williams, not young prospect, but well publicized at this point. Like, she hasn't been a full-time point guard for very long. So what does this experience itself do for her? What does this year do for her? And now heading into the offseason, is it more film work? Is it more drill work? Does she become even more comfortable absorbing multiple coverages coming at her in the game? And now she dices them up at a higher level. Like, what does that kind of internal growth do for this Minnesota group as you just build another year of continuity? So I don't think Minnesota has to do anything extra. Like, if there's a move there, then by all means, if you can land like a legit all-star, but I don't think they have to hunt that type of move, to your point. So I think Minnesota's in a really good spot. And for the Liberty, naturally, like, I'd imagine Stewie's going to be back, et cetera. I'm curious to see what they do this offseason, because I think they can generate a good bit of cap space if they want to. We will see. I guess I'm curious to see, like, what happens with Courtney Vandersloot in particular. Like, you could ride off into the sunset with a title. You could say, hey, I'm still really good and can help this group. I'm coming back. And you can still just solidify the backcourt or settle in as super sub. That's going to be an interesting decision to track there. But overall, what a finals. What a finals this was, what a game five this was, and zooming all the way out very quickly before we move to the news portion and shift to the NBA talk. What a season, man. This was such a season of growth for the W, for its players, the league itself, charter flights, and the attendance numbers, and the TV numbers. You get the agreement on the new TV deal that's going to come into play soon. I'm so excited for where the league is, where the league is growing. It is certainly not perfect. There are things to tweak. And as we get into new CBA talks, there are going to be some important conversations that need to be had about, like, you know, player safety off court, as nasty as like some of the social media stuff was, like what safeguards are being put into place, things like that, as we handle charters, like what's that going to look like. There are big picture conversations to be had, but the league is trending in the right direction. I couldn't be happier for these players and the growth that they are experiencing, getting the audience, getting the eyeballs, ultimately getting the money, or getting closer to getting the money that they truly deserve. And I just had a lot of fun with this year, man. Like, the Liberty finished their story. The Minnesota Lynx got to the finals. Like, the Aces ultimately fell short, but we just saw one of the best, if not the best, individual season from Asia Wilson that we had seen in league history. Connecticut Sun, elite defensively, another great season for Alyssa Thomas. Dawana Bonner just climbing up like multiple all-time lists in W history this year. You add in Marina Mabry, you see what she means to that unit, what her shot creation can mean. Excited to see what Connecticut's going to look like. They could look very different next season. Or you bring this group back and they're just really good again. It kind of, the fever season kind of speaks for itself with what the product looked like on the court, all the eyeballs and things that Caitlin Clark brought in, or helped bring in, rather. The Fever did a ton of fun stuff this year. Like, there, you could just point out a whole lot. Like, Seattle wasn't the smoothest build for them, but ultimately really good defensively, unique offense. You saw Nneka and Ezzie work together. Jewel Lloyd didn't quite have it to her usual standard, but you also got Jewel games this year. Skylar Diggins-Smith post All-Star break looked like her all-W self. Again, like, how does Seattle build off of that? Like, there were so many fun stories and fun teams and fun plots to follow this season. And it kind of leads into this ridiculous offseason where they're just going to be a whole bunch of one-year deals before we head into the new CBA and expansion. And it's just a really fun time in the W right now.
Agreed. Teams not mentioned: the Phoenix Mercury, Atlanta Dream, Washington Mystics, Chicago Sky, Dallas Wings, and Los Angeles Sparks. Shout out, Arika.
Hey, there we go. I mean, hey, I gave you six. If you want to talk about the other six, you can. Or I can go. Like, we can do the thing.
Go, bud.
Well, hey, rookie class in L.A. We'll see what happens with the draft live. But Rakia Jackson, a whole lot of fun. We got some good stuff from Lee Yuru this year. Cam Brink, before she went down, looked like a devastating defender. You look at Dallas, the way the offense operated. When they got healthy post-All-Star break, you got to see glimpses of what this team really could be. Again, as you shouted out, Arike went under the radar because of the injuries and the record. And we also just have more Dallas talk shortly, so I guess we won't hang here too long. But under the radar, but a career year for Arike Ogunbowale. The three-point shooting for Satu Sabally when she did make her season debut, that carried on throughout the year. If that is real, she is just a different player for this, for the Wings or elsewhere heading into next season. but a lot of change happening in Dallas. Washington, I will give the shout out to Stephanie Dolson for the 3-point shooting in particular and the way that she opened up that offense. The Mystics dealt with their own bevy of injuries, and I hope they are able to get healthy, particularly Shakira Austin, who is one of my favorite players to watch in the league. But that the offense functioned in a way that I wasn't used to seeing with this group. Spacier group, more threes, play with a little bit more tempo in the half court, push more in transition. Fun group amidst all of the injuries there. Atlanta Dream, more change is coming, but really good defense this year, particularly post All-Star break. Tina Charles turning back the clock, also moving up the all-time scoring list and making her own history, set the double-double record as well. I am excited for Ryan Howard and what she's going to grow into, particularly off on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, we saw real flashes of all defense potential for her, particularly early in the year. Alicia Gray, a metronome of two-way impact. Jordan Canada, her drives were very impactful when she was on the floor. I hope she has a healthier campaign next season. That's four. Who else am I missing? The Chicago Sky. Hello, Kennedy Carter. Just welcome back, Kennedy Carter. All-star caliber talent. The drives were phenomenal. The playmaking grew. The defense from day one of the season to day, insert number here, by the time the season ended, was just night and day in terms of the off-ball attentiveness. She really took on the challenge on-ball as well. Angel Reese in a historic rookie season. I really enjoyed watching Elizabeth Williams play defense this year. I hate that she got injured as early as she did. I hate she got injured, period. But big season for her. The Angel Reese plus Izzy Harrison minutes were fun. Mikayla Anyawede continued to carve out a role, like fun season in Phoenix last year, go to Chicago, also able to carve out some minutes in Chicago, like in Phoenix, and carve out some minutes in Chicago. Real two-way potential there. Who am I missing, Steve? Who am I missing? Let me see. We got the Sparks. We got the Mystics. We got the Wings. We got the Sky. We got the Dream. Darn.
Hey, you chose this path, man. I ain't got no rafts over here, bud.
Darn. All right, let me hold on. We're going to do some live research here. We're going to pull up the standings, see which team.
It's Phoenix. You can't.
Phoenix, there we go.
You have nothing good to say about the Phoenix Mercury.
Yes, I do. No, I just had a. Listen, I blanked. My apologies to the Phoenix Mercury. What a year it was for Kalia Copper. First true season as a number one option. Fourth quarter monster, drives, pull-ups, more comfort against unders, more comfort against drop this season. Brittany Griner, late entry to the season because of the early injury, but once she came in, was a monster on the block. The passing was fun. Her and Diana Taurasi working two-player actions with an empty side was incredibly fun. Diana Taurasi, if this was it, what a run it's been. Quality season for her. Natasha Cloud defending all over the place. Hey, just put me on fours and fives this year. I will still be super impactful. Sophie Cunningham, knock it down. Triples. Also spending time at the four, fighting for a life sometimes when having to guard up. But gave it her all nonetheless. Natasha Mack, one of the best screeners in basketball. Also good defensive season for her. Kiki Herbert-Harrigan knocking down shots off the bench. Phoenix did some fun stuff. And then Nate Tibbs just coming in general. Like one of the more unique zone defenses that I've seen this season. I'll continue to shout that portion out. Phoenix has some stuff to build on as well. And Rebecca Allen, please get well soon. Very important for this basketball team and its success moving forward. She just fills so many gaps for them on both ends of the floor. Boom. 12 teams, 12 thoughts. We did it. The W is awesome.
12 thoughts.
Well, more than 12 thoughts, but 12 concepts of thoughts. We did it. Any closing thoughts on the finals or the W as a whole before we move to the news portion?
No.
Okay, fair enough. We will then move to the one news item that we have on the W front. The Dallas Wings firing head coach Latricia Tramble after two seasons with the team, a 31-49 record across those two seasons. 22-18 in year one, made the postseason, won around 9-31 this past season. But again, just a ton of injuries, and I don't know if the defensive personnel kind of lends itself to what Latricia Tramble wanted to do on the defensive end. And so like I ended up tweeting it out after the news came out. Like one, I was just surprised that the move was made, but I immediately tweeted out, like, I don't blame this season on her. Like, I don't know what you do with no Satu for half a year, Natasha Howard mostly out, or just missed a bunch of time. You have a revolving door at point guard in particular. I don't know. Like, they just made the playoffs last season. Like, I didn't look at the Dallas Wings this year and say, oh, this is a coaching problem. And so, like, that portion surprised me just in a vacuum. But I guess you think about it, the announcement was that plus they're looking to add a GM. It's like, well, I guess if you are adding a general manager into the room, GMs generally want to pick their own person. And so if you weren't 100% sold on Latricia Tramble, then I understand, let's get in lockstep with a vision. GM pick their person. Let's just go into this with a shared vision.
Ah, so I get, let me raise my hand real quick before you continue.
What's up?
That does not guarantee a shared vision. Number one, that's because the vision comes from the top. Continue.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. But I guess I compare that to like the Chicago situation, to where, hey, let's hire the coach and then let's hire the GM. And then a year later, we are now searching for a coach. It's like and even just looking on the NBA side, like it just feels like doing that at once, or at the very least getting the GM in the door first, tends to lend itself to more success, continuity, whichever word you want to use there, versus the inverse.
If I could raise my hand again, take a look and see which one tends to last longer. Continue.
Well, then, I guess with these new thoughts presented to me, I am back at square one, in which I'm not sure why you pressed this button after this season in light of the injury and just the general availability context that Dallas was operating in this year. Like, my only thing I could add is, as someone that's like not on the beat and doesn't have sources, like if there's some behind the scenes, we don't get along type stuff that I'm just not privy to, then sure. But just from an on-court perspective, again, I didn't watch the Wings this year and think this is like a poorly prepared group, or, you know, like that just wasn't the vibe that I got. So this one caught me off guard a little bit.
It's 2024. A lot of people make decisions based on the options that they believe they have. You mentioned the defensive personnel. What are they missing defensively?
Well, I guess you were just missing your best wing defender in Satu for half the year. But I more so look at the front court. And more specifically, I look at the center room. It's not a group that screams, we can do multiple things at a competent or high level. And I think if you're also going to play with the type of pace that we've seen the Wings dabble in the last year and a half, it's even more important that you can kind of get that stuff settled in. So I mostly look there. It also doesn't help, like, as much respect as I have for Natasha Howard, who has historically been a very good defender. This didn't feel like her best year either. So it's like it's combinations of factors. But I guess just looking at the team overall, like, I look at just the front court room first. And so I am curious to see what shifts on that front, if anything. Like, we know there's a guarantee, like, Natasha Howard is going to be there. So, like, there is just a hole there as a concept. But beyond that, like, what type of roster are you trying to build to make sure that this defense can get to where it needs to get to? I think if you're able to get that to a level, especially if you bring Satu back, I think Arike plus Satu plus solid defense should equal playoffs for Dallas, presumably health. Like, I don't think they're far off from like the playoff portion anyway. Like, I do think they are a ways off from like genuine contention right now, in light of what the Liberty have and what they just did, what we just saw from the Lynx. The Aces, I don't think they're going anywhere. The Storm just put together multiple All-Stars, et cetera. So how close are the Wings to actual contention? That feels like a little bit of a gap right now. But like, that thing, they can be right back in the playoff picture as soon as next season, if they're healthy and they're able to rebuild like the front end of the roster. Good. I'll flip it to you. Like, what were your initial thoughts when that news came in?
I thought LT did a great job with that team. They were developing that identity. Injury played season. I didn't necessarily think it was on her, but decisions were made, and that's the business. I think it's a tough year to have that type of season when so many teams have put together more star power and more efforts to contend. You now fall from that 3-4-5 area to just, all the way to the bottom because everyone's just out. And so that's life.
Yeah, that is, that's just tough. So again, like, I think Trisha Tran was a good coach. Like, I hope she's able to land on her feet, assuming that she wants to jump right back in it. If she wants to take a year, like, obviously she can do what she wants, but yeah, like, I just didn't look at the situation like she's doing a bad job. So hopefully she is able to land on her feet quickly in whatever capacity that she wants to. And we will see what happens with the Dallas Wings this offseason. We got some fun things to sort through on that front. To the NBA side, very quickly on the news front, and then we'll get into some injuries. The Clippers announcing that PJ Tucker will not be with the team moving forward. Statement reads, "We've had ongoing conversations with PJ throughout the offseason and have both decided that he won't be with the team for the time being. PJ is a pro who has achieved a lot in his career, and there's more he wants to accomplish. We will continue working with PJ and his representative to find the best situation for him moving forward." So very quickly, I'd imagine he would want to go to a contender or someone that's close at the very least, if there's a buyout or if there's a trade. Are the Indy PJ Tucker teams that stand out to you off the top of your head?
Miami.
That would, yeah. 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 You get the PJ pushback. You get some of the random post-ups, some handoffs and things. He hits corner threes. I will guard up so Jimmy doesn't have to. Makes sense. Get into the rejuvenation machine. I feel you. I think Miami and Milwaukee were the two teams that came to mind for me, which just also just happened to be the two teams that he's had recent success with. But like, that infrastructure is there to where both of those teams have at least some questions about what does the forward room look like in particular. And so it feels like if either team is looking to add veteran depth there, like, PJ makes sense in that regard. I would imagine for both of them, if it's a buyout, cool, come on in. We know you, we love you, et cetera. If it's a trade, I'm not trying to give up XYZ. So I am generally curious on how long this is going to take and like what the actual avenue to PJ not being a Clipper officially is going to be, if that's going to be a trade or some sort of buyout. But if he hits the open market, like, I imagine, again, those two teams come calling in particular. I don't know if Philadelphia tries to spin the wheel on that again. I would doubt that. How would you, I saw somebody, I wish I could remember which account it was, float this out on Twitter not too long ago. How would you feel about PJ in Denver?
I would rather just, I would get it, but I would rather kind of keep the, give room for your young players to grow. So who's he going to play with?
Is that just another, I guess, a non Aaron Gordon small ball five answer? Do you play him next to Zeke if you were giving him back up, or next to Dario rather?
I mean, did you play him if you have Dario?
I guess that depends on how you feel about Dario defensively at the five, which I think questions can be had. But because there are avenues to do it if they really want to do it.
I'm just conceptually, if Dario is in theory your backup five, what is the need that we have for?
I got you. I guess just another defensive option at the very least on a night that Dario doesn't have the shot going. Like, all right, here's an early stint. Didn't work. Let's go PJ. Late second, late third, something like that. Change of pace option. But no, I got you on that front. How would you feel about New Orleans?
Better last year than this year.
Okay. Those are teams off the top of my head anyway. I don't think, is there anyone else? Which means we'll finish recording. I'll be like, oh snap, what about Team X? But no, that'll probably do it for me. Then very quickly on the injury front, just catch up on some of the major names at the very least. Clippers forward Kawhi Leonard, again, out indefinitely. Announced earlier today as we record on a Monday, Bucks forward Chris Middleton, as he rehabs from his ankle surgeries from the offseason, slated to miss the season opener at the very least. We'll see if that ends up being a longer term thing, as the Bucks are being cautious, a bit conservative with the recovery to make sure he's fully good. Thunder center Isaiah Hartenstein with a hand injury, out 5 to 6 weeks. So we are right back to Chet at the five, I suppose. But Isaiah Hartenstein going to be out for a little bit. The Cavs announced that Max Strus is going to be out at least 6 weeks. as he deals with an ankle injury. Knicks forward slash center Precious Achiuwa with a strained left hamstring. He is going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. Do any of those in particular raise the brow for you in terms of depth options?
I mean, with Kawhi, obviously you got to keep that steady. You need to make sure whenever he comes back, he's right and ready to play. So, hey, let's see what we have. Let's build on what we have and let's bring Kawhi in when he's ready. I think ditto for Chris Middleton, opportunity for Gary Trent Jr. and Torian Prince to really orient themselves, see if there's a wing off the bench that pops. The Thunder one, they're built to deal with it, but it also kind of takes them backwards to a degree based on what they've kind of found flow-wise with Isaiah Hartenstein, some of the combinations. So it's more of just a bummer as far as like, okay, this is a really fun team who can drive and kick, and they can also get into flow actions with Hartenstein, and they're pretty good defensively. And you just miss that out. You miss out on that for the first month and a half. The Max Strus one, I think the Cavs believe in their depth. I think he's very helpful for them as far as being able to be put in actions as a movement shooter. So it'll be interesting to see how they kind of shift things around there. But I think they think they're pretty deep offensively. Mm-hmm. The Precious one is going to be very interesting because the Knicks rotation has raised the eyebrow. And he was one of the people that I knew was locked in. So now what does that do to that group? And mm-hmm. how deep does Tibbs go early? I'm intrigued by that.
Because Taj Gibson is in Charlotte now, right? Do you hit up like, hey, big dog?
Well, Taj Gibson is a Charlotte Hornet.
Should we try to work something? Hey, can you come back? Here's a second. A top 59 protected second. Taj, please. But no, in all seriousness, I think it's just, hey, Jericho Sims, we looking at you, big dog. Here's your opportunity. Have some fun. Or the vaunted button that Tom Thibodeau doesn't like to press all that often. Hey, OG Anunoby, would you like to play some lots of minutes at V5? Or it's just Hawk Party getting minutes. So I guess we'll see. The other thing I'll add on the Thunder front, there was an ankle tweak for Jalen Williams, the wing slash forward, listed as day to day. So hopefully that isn't a he misses the season opener type beat or anything series long term. But wanted to make sure I said his name as well. Very quickly on the extension front, the Pelicans and Trey Murphy III agreeing to a 4-year, $112 million extension, no option years on the deal. Trey Murphy averaged 14.8 points last year, converted 60% of his twos, 38% of his threes on high volume, and 82% of his foul shots, 5 boards, 2.2 assists, and a steal in 57 games last year. In his 23 starts last season, 16.6 boards, nearly 3 assists, and a steal per game. You like the money for Trey Murphy III?
Yes. Well-deserved. Key piece of New Orleans' future. Makes sense to lock that up.
There you go. And on the Warriors' front, the Warriors and Moses Moody agreeing to a 3-year, $39 million extension. Moses averaged 8.1 points per game last season, converted 56% of his twos, 36% of his threes, 79% from the line, 3 boards in 17 and a half minutes last year. Started 9 games last year, averaged a shade under 13 points and 4 boards in those games. Shout out to Moses getting the money. I wonder if the literal investment in this case kind of banks him into some consistent rotation minutes or just a consistent rotational role. I think he's good enough for it, but the Warriors do also just have a lot of playable guards slash playable wings. So I'm curious to see how the rotation shakes out, but I think he's good. Can knock down shots, can attack closeouts, can hold up defensively. Decision-making and timeliness off the ball, we will keep an eye on as a young player, but I think he's firmly good. So no qualms for me. How do you feel about the Moses deal?
I mean, I think there's two ways to view it. One, I think the Warriors do believe in Moses Moody, despite the fact they have a bunch of players, and it doesn't seem like he always has a straight line to playing time. Mm-hmm. I also think it probably makes a little bit of sense after what we saw with restricted free agency last year for Moses Moody to go ahead and take the money and for the team to maintain the talent and see how it goes going forward. Gotcha. But either way, I think it's a thumbs up.
Yeah, we like it. We like
also,
it.
Also, keep an eye and see if Jalen Suggs and or Jonathan Kuminga get locked up. We will miss the deadline. So,
I see. So by the time this comes out tomorrow, we may have some news on that front. We will catch up on the next episode. Very quickly, as we've sprinkled in some preseason thoughts throughout the hours and hours of season preview content that we've done over the past couple of weeks, I want to give you the opportunity to empty the notebook if you would like. Any teams, players you want to shout out, caught your eye, have some questions about heading into the year, anything of the sort.
Wait, the 17-hour pods wasn't emptying the notebook enough?
Not on the preseason specifically. Yeah. Yeah, just wanted to give you room. Similar to the players that impress thing that we normally do during the regular season. Wanted to give you the opportunity. Same thing we did last year.
What you got?
Well, quite a bit. As I just catch up on general preseason things, I am not going to hit you with thoughts on like all 30 teams. That would just take way too much time. But very quickly, keep an eye on the Indiana Pacers. Pacers peeled because I was watching a whole lot of Pacers stuff over the weekend. But interested by the Indiana Pacers. Starts with Tyrese Haliburton for me, who is obviously good at basketball and is heading into the year healthy. So excited to see how he builds on that. But also, that brother got rid of the ball very quickly. Which not a new thing for Tyrese, but the level in which it is inbound. Hey, Andrew Nembhard, you go initiate some offense, defensive rebound after a miss. Hey, actually, Pascal, you take the ball up the floor. There was just a level of unselfishness that felt worth keeping an eye on. And I do think just the general give it up, let y'all do it type beat that can open up more things for Tyrese Haliburton off the ball, whether it's just receiving screens. It could just be as simple as he gets more catch and shoot opportunities. If Andrew Nembhard is initiating and getting downhill, we saw a lot of drives from Aaron Nesmith in this preseason, varying the results, but he did get 2 feet in the paint pretty often. And so again, do you get easier catch and shoot looks for Tyrese? Does he just get the attack second side a little bit more? Is this a way for, again, Andrew Nembhard to kind of build on the postseason that he had with higher usage? A lot of that was injury related, but he is good. And so is that a way to let Andrew Nembhard do more? Is that a way for Pascal Siakam to get some of the initiation reps that we saw in Toronto if Tyrese is just going to get off the ball? So like that portion of the program intrigued me, and then some other minor things. As James Wiseman is just like a Dunker Spot watch party favorite for reasons. Just James Wiseman, the Dunker Spot. A lot of fun. Breakneck pace for the Pacers in the half court. And so you just get those dump offs. And I think he also just did a good job of I'm starting on the left block. Let me move, or I'm starting on the left dunker. Let me rotate to the right one as this drive is happening. He just did a really good job of his fine increases and getting those dump offs of keeping an eye on the screening and the defense. And I think with the Pacers defense in general, what coverages are the Bigs going to be in? Are y'all going to be at the level this much? If so, what does the weak side look like? And just a general, where's the help coming from for Indiana? I think something that we talked about a little bit last year, something that the great Caitlin Cooper has talked about on her Patreon on the timeline, is the Pacers kind of toggling between we are defending everything 2v2 and we're actually just flooding the paint with help. And it felt like it was a little bit of just swinging back and forth in that regard. And we did see a little bit of everything from the help point from the Pacers with mixed results. So I am curious to see what they settle in on that front, because I think their overall goal, honestly, similar to my Lynx thoughts heading into the year, this offense is going to be really good. This offense is going to be really fun. Will the defense be good enough for it to hashtag matter? And so if the Pacers can get to 17th, 18th in defensive rating with this breakneck pace offensively, and again, if Tyrese is giving it up like this, he's still going to produce because he's that good. But now you get more from Andrew Nembhard, more supplemental value offensively from Aaron Nesmith, more comfort for Pascal Siakam, and obviously you can mix Tyrese in as a screener for Pascal, or you just go to traditional setup with Pascal screening for Tyrese. Like, there are a lot of things that the offense can do and a lot of pressure they can put on defenses. But the defense has to get to a level, because if the East is going to be as strong as it is, and if they're going to be any semblance of healthy, it would not be a surprise if the Pacers are like exactly as good as they were last year, and then they just fall to sixth or seventh because everyone else is doing the thing or improving. And so if they're able to build on that defense, then it would surprise me if the Pacers are like the 3 seed this year. But I think it is going to be dependent on what the defense is going to look like there. With the Miami Heat, we just got burned with Terry Rozier and Tyler Hero and Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo together. And so just seeing how those four have played off of each other, like something you mentioned was Jimmy Butler's usage as a screener. But in general, like a lot more Tyler Hero off the ball. A lot of Terry Rozier initiating offense on one side, Tyler Hero on the other, and flowing that way, and the inverse. Bam taking threes is naturally going to be intriguing to me. And just in general, what the Heat are doing on the weak side. Like, hey, I like the uptick in pin-in screens and the uptick in flares. Like, let's do that. Let's see if we can generate a little bit more three-point volume, help balance out this offense, because Miami was very mid-range heavy last season. So if you can create some stuff, I think that should be helpful for their offense. And as the Heat are very much entering this season, looking to bolster the offense is something that Eric Spoelstra has talked a lot about. The players have been asked about plenty. Heat fans and Heat media certainly want to see the offense perk up to match some of the star level talent that they have.
I think nailing the little things like that should be helpful for them. So, and then beyond that, it's preseason. So we'll see how much of it carries on the regular season. But defensive effort for Tyler Hero was pretty interesting. That brother got his hand on a lot of passes in the passing lanes. If he is actually like a neutral defender this year, that is intriguing to me. You know, the pick and roll chops that he has and is still trying to grow in. Ridiculous off-ball shooter on top of that. Neutral defense just makes him a better player, period. And so that portion is going to be fun. Nikola Jovic, he just makes the decisions are very quick for him. And I just love it. I love that they can use him as an initiator. He can grab and go. Just him in transition, just knowing how to fill lanes. And when he has the ball, just making the right decisions with the ball in his hands, a lot of fun. And again, if he's able to grow defensively, if he's going to take on more five assignments, what does that unlock for Bam defensively is something that's intriguing to me. The Golden State Warriors, only undefeated team in the preseason this year. Talked about a little bit on the season preview, so I won't hang here too long. But, buddy, they just have a lot of good basketball players, and I am interested in seeing how Steve Kerr rounds out this rotation to see how they're going to build on that. Very quickly on the Charlotte Hornets, because I have to do a quick Hornets thing. They have a lot of players that are willing to shoot the basketball. Buddy, I tell you what, Brandon Miller looked good. LaMelo Ball, shout out to the ankle braces, but also just shot the leather off the ball. Trey Mann still generating what feels like 20 feet of space on his step backs, but also some really fun passing chops for him. If he can, the Hornets aren't going to be good enough for like legit award talk. So that's going to bother me. But like Trey Mann is good. I'll plant my flag on the Trey Mann is good portion of the program. Tijon Salon, I will say very quickly, some of the most fun film that I've watched in preseason in some time. I don't want to go too heavy on like all rookie team, et cetera, because I don't know what the minutes are going to look like. And ultimately, I have no idea what he does inside the arc yet on the NBA level. So like that's just going to tamper things down. But he shot everything in this preseason and just watching him bomb away from like 30 or 32 feet, like Charlotte just mixing in. Hey, here's a random flare. You catch the ball at the hash and you're just shooting it in rhythm. Oh, here's a little bit of wide action for you. You can curl down, get downhill. He's taking these funky, like off one floaters, which I don't know what he does inside the arc yet. But the fact that he's trying some of this is fun, but he just did not care about contest at all. And if he's that level of shooter, I'm sure Charlotte will find some playing time for him. So I will leave it there. Some other notes that I have. you told me to go.
Do you see why I did what I did?
Oh Lord. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander taking more pull-up threes. That is intriguing to me. The Jalen Brunson super high pick and roll with him and Kat in particular. That's a whole lot of space for Jalen Brunson. And he already has all the inside the arc tricks and the really good footwork. So if you're giving him even more of a runway, how effective will he be in pick and roll? Per second spectrum, nearly 1.2 points per possession on pick and roll reps for Jalen Brunson. Small sample size in his preseason, but that is absurd if you care about that portion of the program. You mentioned the Dame drives. I would just like to echo the Dame drives were fun. And just in general, I think Gary Trent Jr. is going to be a really good fit with this Milwaukee group. Cade Cunningham operating with a little bit more space. That's cool. Pick and rolls with him and Jalen Duren, like mixing up where those are being set. Not that's a new thing, but like you're talking about something that caught my eye. Hey, let's go Cade and Jalen with the wing. Let's move somebody from above the break. Let's give them a little bit more room to get downhill. Like watch the Cleveland game in particular. To where Cade and Jalen Duren just told Jared Allen, you're not going to have fun trying to figure out what we're trying to do here. You got Tobias Harris spaced on the other side of the floor, and then here's a catch and shoot opportunity. Here's a catch and drive, things like that. Hey, let's actually set this pick like 4 feet inside the arc. And if you don't step up, Cade just has a pull up. And if you do, here's another lob over the top to Jalen Duren. That was just a lot of fun for me. What else we got in the notes here? Oh, something that I should have touched on the last pod, so I'll take the L. Hey, As you know, I am a huge fan of Mikal Bridges, have been for a very long time. So this jumper, should we be concerned? Because I just wasn't expecting like jumper tweaks from him because like he can shoot. And he went 2 of 19 from 3 in the preseason. Again, it's preseason, small sample, but like the jumper just doesn't look the same. So is this going to be like a more reps, he's going to be fine. He's going to revert back to what we've seen. I don't know.
But on the other end of the spectrum, Jason Tatum's jumper looking a little smoother. He shot, what, 39% from three in preseason? If that's better, that's going to be intriguing to me. Julian Strahler still being a preseason monster. I think averaged, what, 17.8 points per game in preseason last year, 18.8 this year. Shot the leather off the ball, continues to do so. I think that's where I will cap off my preseason notes.
I like the Dallas Mavericks movement.
There we go.
Putting Klay Thompson into different actions, get a little bit more flow, a little bit of a better base. That plus the Luka stuff should be fun. I think the Rockets, Steven Adams screening and the runways he can open up. Jalen Green had a good mindset, so the Rockets were interesting. The Clippers defense was very fun to watch. So they're going to
shout out Kai Jones. You got the two-way thing.
They're going to defend. The integration of DeMar is something that intrigues me. The Pelicans, I can't wait to watch them in the regular season. That's going to be fun stuff. The Sixers, the ideas are fun as far as we want to move the ball from side to side. We can add more switching, so I enjoyed that. You already touched on the Miami offense, but I've liked seeing the flow and at least the mindset to move the ball. The Celtics, hey, we don't have a five that can do that much anymore, but we're still going to space them out there. Some of the ways that teams are using their bigs to continue to just kind of space them, even if they're non-shooters, to continue action, that's been fun. It's more of a league-wide thing. Three-point volume. Y'all gonna make me mad with this volume talk, but salute to that. Here's the thing, right? I'll go on the old man rant right now.
Okay.
Not every three is equal. Not every three is a good three. Not every three is a good generated shot. Like, are you generating quality shots? Fantastic. But if we're just going to copy and paste and be like the guy who said, well, all you got to do is take the most threes and you win. And I don't need graphics for you to say the same thing that he said like 2 years ago. So no thanks.
Okay.
What other team popped for me? I mean, you named almost everyone. So salute to you. I touched on most of these during the previews. The Suns, I think, are fun. Milwaukee intrigues me. They showed some pretty good flashes when Dame and Giannis were together as far as the improvement of that two-man game. But, yeah, excited for the season to come.
There we go. I had to say very quickly on the Boston front, Jordan Walsh, knocked down shots and can defend. Shout-out Heat Summer League legend Drew Peterson, who also just shot the leather off the ball. Peyton Pritchard had himself one heck of a preseason. I am very close as we get to the award prediction. He didn't end up being my pick, so I will spoil that early. But like, I did give half a thought to, hey, what if Peyton Pritchard is just sixth man of the year? Like, what if he's just legit good and continues being legit good, and he actually just gets like reps, and he just does the thing for the best team of the East? Like, what if again, didn't end up being my pick, but that is at least a thought that I had. But yeah, I think that'll do it for me. As I gave a whole lot of preseason thoughts. So I appreciate you for giving me the space, big dog. Let's get into some season predictions to close out the pod. Now, as we did last season, it's very much here's who we think will win, or here are some of the guys that we think are going to be in the conversation, et cetera, et cetera. Let's start with MVP, Steve. I'll ask you this on a basic level. How many players do you anticipate having legitimate arguments for MVP this year? How deep is the field?
To start?
Yeah.
I mean, you could probably make an argument for 10 to 12 just based on what it could happen. I don't think Nikola Jokic wins it. I don't think Joel Embiid wins it. So it off the top of my head feels like a Jason Tatum, Luka, Shea type year. But then it's like, well, if the Bucks do the thing, is it Giannis? If the Suns do the thing, is it KD? Or do they just split? If the Wolves do it again, is it Anthony Edwards' time? Is there an outside shot for like a Jalen Brunson or a Tyrese Halliburton or a Donovan Mitchell? Does Steph Curry or LeBron get the legacy we're better than you thought type beat? So I probably had it to like a good six, but I felt pretty good about the start with possibles depending on results.
Okay. You pretty much listed everybody that I had. I guess the name that I included that you mentioned, but you probably aren't. Like, I do think Jokic is going to factor in. Like, one general thought that I had as I was going through these awards is how much is the preseason conversation going to help or hurt some of these guys? Because, like, I think in a vacuum, I probably agree with you, like, Jokic is going to have a really hard time. But if everybody feels like the spacing is going to be bad and losing KCP hurts and like the extension talks around Aaron Gordon are weird and the rest of the West is strong, et cetera, et cetera. If everybody feel like Denver's actually going to be like 5 or 6 and then they're second or first, does Jokic find himself right back in the conversation? Because I don't think he's going to drop as a player at all. Like, to your point, like, I think it's more of a perception deal. But if the perception is lower heading into the year and then he's super good again, does Jokic factor back into the MVP race in a in the way that he probably should anyway?
In the conversation, yes. I don't. He has literally a singular path of winning again. I'm just being honest.
No, I feel you.
He has to be extremely good, and Denver has to be extremely good, or else it's I don't see it. That's no disrespect to him. I just projecting how people do this. I don't see it happening. And I don't think the preseason talk is going to factor in because there's going to be 82 games, and most people are going to pay attention to the last 41. So. It be what it be, but I don't. I think he's gonna have a hard time. And that Western Conference, he's gonna have a hard time.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Who would be your? Well, you mentioned what Jokic, Tatum, Shea.
Sure didn't mention Jokic. This man don't be listening.
Oh,
to me.
Not Jokic.
I said Tatum, Luka, Shea.
Luka is what I meant. My apologies. Tatum, Luka, Shea is the three you're looking at. I think Luka is just my MVP pick heading into the year. I think. It feels weird to say finals momentum, considering like so much of the conversation in the finals was, hey, man, the Celtics are really trying to put him in action, et cetera. But you have that finals run in general, in addition to how freaking good he was last season. It had a strong case for MVP last season. If Dallas is just firmly top four all year versus kind of slower start for Luka, we're solid. Post all-star break, we take off, et cetera. If it is just a full season of the Mavericks are a top four team in the West and Luka is averaging darn near triple double, et cetera, it just feels like he can streamline his way to this. I think he's going to have the mix of wins plus box score plus advanced stuff. Because again, he had a strong case last year. So Luka probably be my pick, but also guys will keep an eye on Shea, Jokic, Giannis, Tatum. My dark horses were Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards. You mentioned Steph and LeBron. I will also add Anthony Davis to the mix. If we do legit get the LeBron takes the step back and it's like actually pushed as LeBron takes the step back too, like I think the narrative deal could help AD if he is going to something that you pointed out. The way that they move Anthony Davis around the board, if he's going to be DPOY level and also better offensively and the jumper hits this year, and the Lakers are good, like there's a pathway to him entering the conversation. So I wouldn't be surprised by that portion. Love Tyrese Halliburton shout. So yeah, those are my early thoughts on MVP. I think Luka would be my October 21st, or October 22nd prediction. And naturally, we'll see how the games are played. But that's where I'm at right now. Defensive player of the year, Steve.
Dang, I ain't gonna give my pick.
Oh, you gave your three. I thought that you were leaving at your three. My apologies.
That's crazy. I'll add this thought. I'm just going to go off a pattern. Second place to first place. Look it up. Let's go Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Here's the thing. I think, honestly, I feel like it's probably going to be a split between those two again, and Giannis just ends up winning. But I'll just say Shea, because second place has become first place for like 3 years in a row.
Okay.
To DPOY. It's the defensive player, the Victor Wembanyama. What's next? Shout out to Bam. It's going to be Victor Wembanyama. I'm sorry.
Can I toss out a name that I actually think will win it? Because I think this team's going to be really good, and I think this person's going to be healthy.
Is this a name that all of the media members who have votes are going to agree on?
Mike, because this person has received votes in the past.
Who is it?
Can I enter Evan Mobley into the conversation? Because I think he could serve as the midpoint of the Bam versatility. He's not going to have the volume of Wimby blocks, but he'll have the box. He'll have some loud box score stuff, and the Cavs will be really good. Because there is still a world in which we'll get to like standing prediction later, but there is a world in which the Spurs just aren't good again. I don't think it's out of bounds. I think Evan Mobley is one of the best defenders in basketball. Can switch, can execute multiple coverages. Again, block shots, got better as a rebounder, spent more time at the five and held his own there. If you want versatility plus box score plus advanced stuff plus on winning team, Evan Mobley might just have the best combination of those factors.
Evan Mobley got 8 first place votes, 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. Behind Jaren Brooke. buddy, Victor, look how many votes Victor got last year, bud.
Oh, no, I get it. I'm just, hey. Victor is also on my list, to be clear.
Hey, no disrespect to Evan Mobley.
I think he is just the odds on favorite.
No disrespect to Evan Mobley. He's behind Bam. If Anthony Davis is better, he's probably behind Anthony Davis. Herb Jones still exists. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll sprinkle that one in. The also considering section for me was Bam and Wimby and Anthony Davis. My dark horses, if you care to hear those. Because, again, there is still, like, the 65 games played minimum. You got to keep an eye on that front. So this person may be eliminated by that. But if not, do we get the New York media push? Not that it would take that, because I love watching this dude play defense. But does OG Anunoby factor in if he does have to spend some time at the five and just generally just clamps up a whole bunch of people for an elite team in the East? Wouldn't be surprised if his name is factored in.
Okay.
If the Oklahoma City Thunder are once again a top five defense, if they are the one seed this year, do you either get the bump and, you know, people love the interior, so do you get the Chet Holmgren push, or do you get shiny new face and new place plus team is the one seed? Do you get Alex Caruso with the rep that he already has as one of, if not the best guard defender in basketball? Dark horse name I'll toss out there. If the Pelicans with no center are still a top 10 defense, that credit is going to go to Herb Jones, and probably rightfully so. So if you get the mix of elite perimeter defense and Herb actually spends more time on some fours and stuff and holds his own, I wouldn't be surprised if there is at least an article about Herb Jones should be your defensive player of the year, and here's why. If the Warriors are really good, Draymond Green is quite the defender. Let's toss his name out there. One more name that I will toss into the fray to keep an eye on, assuming that this team is any semblance of healthy, which we already got something with this name, funny enough. But if Jaren Jackson Jr. gets to play the four more this year and the Grizzlies jump right back into the playoff picture, Jaren slided right back into the Romer role, excuse me.
The what? Blocks.
He gets to roam a lot. But no, I think Jaren Jackson Jr. is still a really good defender. If he's at the four, if we get any kind of cut down on fouls, the Grizzlies top six seed, I wouldn't be surprised if the name gets in there as well. But again, that's the dark horse list for me. Do you have any other defensive player to your thoughts for you?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
Two thumbs up. You're right.
not you. Fair enough. Rookie of the year, Steve.
Zach Edey.
Okay. I think it feels like a hot take. I think it's just going to be the number one pick of the draft. I may also just be Hawks peeled as a concept, so that could also be part of the calculus, but like, Zachary Risache, like I've enjoyed the summer league. I've enjoyed the preseason. I didn't add him into the list because I mentioned like 87 other things, but I could use the opportunity to do so here. But can shoot, makes quick decisions with the ball, can pass. His usage as a screener on and off the ball is a lot of fun to me. I think the Hawks are going to be a very good offense. And if he's playing and you look at the wings that are ahead of him in particular, like I think there is a real pathway to him just starting somewhat soon. If he's going to get minutes, if he's going to get usage, and the Hawks are going to score, and by proxy, he will also score. Like, I think he'll have the mix of box score stuff to do it. So I have Risache as my rookie of the year right now. Zach Edey is on the short list for me now. Alongside Alex Sarr, I think he will just play. Like, he's been starting. And I guess the midpoint between, like, also considering in the dark horses, like Stephon Castle in San Antonio, like Devin Vassell isn't expected back until early November. And I think in general, because of the size that Stephon Castle has, like you can fit him into like two or even three guard lineups if you want, if you're San Antonio. So I do think there's a usage deal that he can tap into. And if the Spurs are good and Wimby is good, more people are going to see Stephon Castle. And if he's good, I think he can also just get a bump on that front. So those would be some names that I would be looking at as far as dark horses. Like Reed Shepherd is probably the person that I had the toughest time with this. Because I just don't know what kind of role he's going to have. Like if Fred VanVleet is, I don't know, like on one hand he's never healthy, but also he plays through stuff. But like if Fred plays, he's going to play a lot of minutes. You have Jalen Green. I would imagine this is going to be more on the offensive end for Amen Thompson. And so like I don't know if he gets the on-ball usage to get the box score numbers to make that pop.
I feel like Reed Sheffert would very much be a 17-minute a game. He has the best advanced stats, best EPM of the rookie class. And if you just watch him, you get it. But if you don't, then it's going to be kind of tough for him. But I'd at least say his name. Ryan Dunn in Phoenix, Cody Williams in Utah, Matas Buzelis in Chicago. Like, I don't know. Like, Ryan probably just isn't going to have the box score stuff. And if the shot goes backwards, then it just gets tough anyway. But he'd probably be one of the more impactful rookies in this class. And he's going to play for a good team, so voters will get the opportunity to see him. Matas Buzelis may just get a usage deal if deals are made in Chicago. And if they actually play him more at the four, like, I think there's going to be room for him to play there. And Cody Williams, like, we will see what kind of moves are made in Utah. But wouldn't surprise me if just wing minutes open up, period. And he is someone that can do a little bit of everything. And within the Will Hardy offense, like, the ball moves, the body moves, unconventional setups to get guys downhill. So, like, there will be avenues for Cody Williams to produce. So I'll say we'll just toss the name out there. Did you have any other rookies you wanted to mention? Or that was just it for you?
No, we're good.
Okay. All right. Two most improved, our favorite award to talk through on this podcast. I have Andrew Nembhard early.
Oh, okay.
Huh. All right. I was expecting the all caps what or something, but no. I think if he's able to build on the postseason, like, on a very basic level, if he's able to replicate what he did in the postseason, like, those numbers are just going to be so much higher than what his regular season numbers were last season. But I do think there's just general room for him to get better as an initiator, as a driver, as a defender. He'll have two-way impact for this Pacers team. Early vote for Andrew Nembhard. I struggled a little bit with... I feel like Jalen Williams is a really popular pick in OKC, and I do think he's going to be better this year. Now, granted, the ankle tweak certainly doesn't start him off on the right foot, no pun intended. But I just wonder what kind of box score jump he's going to have this year. Like, there's a world in which he is just much better and refines his game, but, like, the box score numbers don't jump enough for voters to really do the thing with him. In a way that, like the Ja year, you saw a really big bump in the box score. Or with Tyrese Maxey, you saw a pretty big bump in the box score. Like, I don't know if Jalen gets that this year, even if he gets better. So, like, that's where I personally struggle with that portion. But, again, it wouldn't surprise me if he does get it. But either way, I land with Nembhard. Keep an eye on Jalen. Keep an eye on Evan Mobley. That's where I rock.
Snuck him in there in the end. Let's see. Can I add to that list of players that are likely to get considered for most improved player? Sure. Cade Cunningham, Brandon Miller, Jalen Williams, Jonathan Kuminga, Keegan Murray, Trey Murphy. Put James Harden down because it made me laugh.
James Harden.
The most improved player is going to Victor Wembanyama.
Okay.
You can go ahead and mark that down. It's not my belief, but I'm telling you it's going to happen. I'm familiar with all y'all's game.
Fair enough. Also in the dark horse section for me, Nikola Jovic, Dyson Daniels, Chicago as a concept. If you do get usage, that new situation for Josh Giddey. You also have Patrick Williams. If he is more aggressive and gets the ball more, like, there's going to be room because the bar isn't there anymore. So keep an eye on those guys. But yeah, moving to sixth man of the year. Early pick for me is Naz Reid.
For a repeat?
Yeah. Not the immediate laughter. That's so tough. But no, I was between Naz Reid and Trey Murphy the third. In all seriousness, I land with Nas. I do feel like, one, Minnesota is going to be very, very, very good this year. And I'm just curious to see what Chris Finch throws out at the end of games. Because, like, there's some opportunity for him to just go with some fun jumbo 2KS lineups to close out some stretches this year. But there's also, hey, if Julius Randle's out or if Julius Randle doesn't have it, Nas Reed has it going. Chris Finch rides the hot hand that's already been there type beat. Like, I think there's just going to be a lot of minutes and opportunity for Nas. And again, he's good. So the on-off splits would help. I'll roll with Nas again.
Malik Monk.
Okay.
Names to consider. Russell Westbrook, Alex Caruso, Buddy Hield.
Okay. I like it. Other names for me, Trey Murphy III, Jonathan Isaac, Deuce McBride. That's the also considering portion for me. As far as actual dark horses, Andre Drummond, Najee Marshall. Can I make you mad real quick? with a potential candidate.
What you got?
So considering that Isaiah Hartenstein is now just missing the first month, I think he will still, if he's healthy from there, would still qualify, still play 65 plus games. This could be, hey, actually the starting unit is still rolling. Let's just keep you in a super sub role. But he can still just be really good for what could be the best team in the West. Would you be shot by an Isaiah Hartenstein six man of the year run?
And no.
There you go.
I would not.
Okay. Dark horse run for me. Coach of the year.
Mike Budenholzer.
Okay. Well, I like it. I like it. I have Kenny Atkinson right now. Kenny in Cleveland, also considering Mike Budenholzer and J.J. Redick. Dark horses for me, which is very much just in the Kaya zone. If the Clippers are still good, Ty Lue is absolutely going to get a lot of noise in light of the Kawhi stuff and everything. If the Raptors or the Hornets are in the play-in picture this year, I will at least say it on the podcast. And if the Hawks are in the play-in picture this year, or the playoff picture at that, rather, Quinn Snyder is going to get a shot. Those are the players in my dark horse division.
Okay.
I'm waiting on your real thoughts here.
There they were.
Okay, fair enough. Actually, very quickly, do you have a clutch player to your thought? Has anybody popped to mind for you?
Damian Lillard.
I like it. See, actually, can I pop you with a question?
What's up?
What if this is just a Jimmy Butler year?
Miami would be happy.
What if the Heat are once again in a clutch game? We just get the Cooper Moorhead tweet every game. And Jimmy Butler just hits the pull-up jumpers this year instead of misses them like he did last year. That could just get funny. Like your usual characters. Like you mentioned Dame, that's a really good shout. De'Aaron Fox is always going to be in it. But actually, ooh, who's the Kings rep for the Clutch Player of the Year award?
It's going to be DeMar.
Sorry, De'Aaron. Also, can we make defense matter for the Clutch Player of the Year? I've gone on this rant before, so I won't do a whole long thing on it. But hey. I think clutch stops should also factor into this. Okay. Y'all be doing the sort by clutch points. And like it's not unfair, but like I think there's just more that can be done with that award. That's all I'm saying. Like I feel like if Alex Caruso just gets key stop after key stop after key stop, and oh, here's this strip on this post up. Oh, y'all down two, y'all trying to run something with 4 seconds left, and Alex Caruso steals the inbound pass, or Alex Caruso takes crucial charge to close out the game, and he also shoots like 40% from three in clutch time. I think he should also, you know, I think he should have a real case for it, you know. I think those cases should exist, is my general thing.
All right. So who else are you making the case for this year?
I think Jokic was my pick last year. That he should factor in. But they're just going to run everything through him. And you know, he can dice up folks. Mentioned the Jimmy portion of the program. Like Shea's going to take a whole lot of big shots. And he also has like, could get like the key steals type beat towards the end of the game. So like, it wouldn't surprise me if he gets the two-way thing going for him as well. Jalen Brunson is going to have the ball in his hands a ton. Wouldn't surprise me if you see that there. Insert a Celtic here. Like this feels like a Jaylen Brown type award to where like Jason Tatum is still going to be their best player. But in the game, Jalen Brown puts head down, gets downhill, or just stops and pops for pull-up twos. So like a Jalen Brown run it, this wouldn't surprise me. Like quiet is kept. Like we keep an eye on Indiana. Again, they're just going to be like one of the swing teams in the league. Could this be a Pascal year? Wouldn't completely shock me. Man's a monster in the mid post, so that get interesting. I don't think Joel the Joel Embiid thing upsets me. Not upsets me. That's too strong. But like because he's not going to be playing back to backs and stuff like that. Like I just don't think he's literally going to factor into any of the awards. They are clearly prioritizing the postseason, which I think is smart. And so, like, it does just generally feel weird to, like, have an MVP discussion or DPOY discussion or clutch player without bringing him up in earnest. But, like, I'm just kind of banking in he's not going to play 65 this year. So that is the only reason I'm withholding him. Because, honestly, he would just be, like, a dark horse defensive player of the year candidate for me.
when he's engaged, he is really freaking good. But like, again, I just don't think he's going to hit the game threshold. So that portion gets interesting. All right, Steve, let's close this out with some standings predictions. And then we do have like a news item on the W front to close things out with. But in the East, who do you have and where do you have them?
In no particular order, or maybe in particular order, it's up to you. Boston, Boston, Milwaukee, the Knicks, the Cavs, the Sixers, the Heat, the Pacers, the Magic, the Hawks, the Pistons.
Ooh, Pistons playing. You're back.
What can I say?
I like it. I like it. Okay. The East for me, I think the six playoff teams are going to be in order: Boston, Cleveland, New York, Milwaukee, Philly, and Indy. My play-in teams are Orlando, Miami, Atlanta, Toronto, and the bottom five: Chicago, Charlotte, Detroit, Washington, Brooklyn. And on the Western Conference side, Steve, who do you have?
In no particular order, or maybe it is. Thunder, Dallas, Phoenix, Minnesota, Denver, New Orleans, the Lakers, Grizzlies, Warriors, Kings.
Huh, okay. Okay. Got you. Got you. For me, my six playoff teams, the Thunder, the Wolves, the Nuggets, the Mavericks, the Suns, and the Kings are my top six. Lakers at seven, New Orleans at eight, Golden State at nine, Memphis at 10. That closes in the play-in portion. And the bottom five, the Clippers just at 11, the Rockets at 12, the Spurs at 13, the Blazers at 14, the Jazz at 15. Actually, do you still want, do you want to do the conference finals and finals matchup?
Yeah, yeah, man, let's do it.
Okay. All right. Well, sorry, Steve, who do you have in the Eastern Conference Finals?
The Eastern Conference Finals, the Celtics and the Bucks.
Okay. I like it. I like it. You know, I had half of mine to also have Celtics Bucks, but because the Bucks are in the 4-5 bracket for me, that would just be a second round matchup if they get there. I think the Celtics are in. Between the Knicks and the Cavs, I am super high on the, you know what? Celtics Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals this year. I'll go Celtics Cavs. Who do you have in the Western Conference Finals?
The Thunder and the Suns.
Oh no. I feel like I need to change my pick off principle, because I do have the Thunder and the Suns in earnest. But to switch things up, I think I'll say Thunder. Actually, yeah, I'm going to go Thunder Wolves. We're going chalk in the conference finals. That would be ooh, because like, in my standings, it would just be Dallas Phoenix in the first round, which gets incredibly nasty. And then that would set up either Thunder Suns or Thunder Mavericks in the second round, which would be incredibly nasty. But no, we will go Thunder Wolves.
All right. Would you like to show off your finals pick first?
I think we get Celtics Thunder in the finals. I think Boston repeats.
Celtics Suns, the Suns win the championship.
Ooh. KD Booker Beal get it done. Mike Budenholzer gets ring number two. I like it.
I don't know. It's a prediction. I didn't even have the Thunder in the playoffs last year.
Well, I guess when you put it down. Got started. All right. Well, as we had some news to come in as we were doing the recording, alluded to a little bit earlier about potential CBA things on the W side. From Shanae Ogunbowale, interestingly enough, that they are officially opting out of the CBA. They will be entering CBA negotiations, hopefully to have that in turn for the 2026 season. So that is a thing that is happening, and we will see what is different on that front. Beyond that, any closing basketball thoughts before we head out of here?
Season's going to be fun. Can't wait to watch it and break it down with you fine folks.
There we go. All right. Well, with that being said, thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe and listen to us. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. Get League Pass if you don't have it already, so you can watch games along with us. We're also going to be doing some live breakdowns. And in general, it's just a fun space to be in. It is free to create a profile. The link is in the podcast description. No shenanigans involved when creating your profile. Come rock with us. Come have some fun. Come watch some hoops. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Put your fours up because it's cute.